Suffering, trauma, natural disasters. These can leave people wondering who's in charge here, or even what's in charge here. Are we on our own in the cosmos? But Dr. Sproul, it wasn't always like that. Christians have long believed in the doctrine of divine providence, something that many in today's world have forgotten. And you've written a booklet to help us return to the truth of providence.
Well, you're right, Lee. If God is not there, the worst thing that could happen for us is not to be living in a hostile universe, but an indifferent one, where no one cares, and where our lives ultimately mean nothing. And I think one of the most important doctrines that we need to recover, as you've already suggested, is the doctrine of God's providence. Because God's providence calls attention to His sovereign authority over everything. Not just over people, but over the stars, the sun, the moon, the animals, the oceans, the rain, the hurricane. Everything is under the sovereignty of God in His infinite wisdom. Now, we make a distinction in theology between primary and secondary causes, and that we as human beings actually have causal power. We make things happen. I decide to take my glasses off, I can do it. But Paul said, we live and move and have our being in God. And so God is the ultimate primary cause of everything. And He works in and through and by our actions and the actions of the forces of this world. But there is, as I have said, not a maverick molecule loose anywhere in the universe that's outside God's sovereign providential control. Now, with the scientific revolution, people have kept their focus on what we would call secondary causes, on how they see the connection between gravity and the tides of the sea and that sort of thing, and have forgotten what has been called in the past God's invisible hand, where God's sovereignty stands above in all of these problems that we deal with, including illness and catastrophic events of nature. Even in these things, we see God at work. We don't always see it immediately. It may not be until we get to heaven that we see how and why God brought certain things to pass. But He is involved in every step of history. And if we pay close attention to what the Bible says, we know that at the final analysis, true science and true theology will meet at the top and will agree. That's what St. Augustine said, that all truth meets at the top. So I'd like to give a copy of this booklet to anyone who calls and asks for it on Renewing Your Mind.
Simply call 1-800-435-4343. Once more, that's 1-800-435-4343. Trying to please God through good works leads only to despair. Martin Luther learned that the hard way. We'll hear his story today on Renewing Your Mind. Martin Luther, of course, is famous as the theologian behind the Protestant Reformation. But long before he began preaching the biblical doctrine of justification by faith, Luther was an Augustinian monk who tried to earn God's favor by doing good works. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Dr. R.C. Sproul recounts the events leading up to Luther's important revelation in Romans chapter 1. It changed the way he viewed God. Today's lesson is titled, Luther's Discovery, and it comes from the series titled, Justification by Faith Alone. Here's the founder and chairman of Ligonier Ministries, Dr. R.C. Sproul.
Back in the early years of television, a program featuring a doctor became wildly popular in our country, and it was, the doctor's name was Ben Casey. Some of you remember that vividly. Vince Edwards was in the starring role, and the front end of that program began with this mysterious voice. I don't remember exactly what it said. It said something like earth, air, fire, water, infinity, or something like that. And then they would lead into this drama every week. And, of course, Ben Casey's mentor, the older doctor, so who was that? Jaffe or somebody, played that doctor. And every now and then, the older mentor of this young doctor would kind of look at Ben Casey and shake his head and say, "You're a strange young man, Ben Casey." Do you remember that? This is a line that would be about every week he would say, "You're a strange young man, Ben Casey." Well, we're not here to talk about Ben Casey. We're here today to talk about Martin Luther. And I'm sure that Luther's mentors more than once looked at him and shook their head and said, "You're a strange young man, Brother Luther." We know the episodes that characterized his torment in the monastery there in Wittenberg as he was a monk in the Augustinian order. And his behavior in the confessional is notorious, where he would go in and to the daily confession and not spend 5 minutes like all of the other monks, but Luther would spend an hour, 2 hours, sometimes 4 hours confessing his sins to his confessor until the confessor would become utterly frustrated and wonder if Luther was gold-bricking, that he just didn't want to do the chores that the monks had to do. And they would say, "Luther, if you're going to confess a sin, confess one that's significant. Don't keep us in here for hours reciting these peccadillos that you would think of." But they understood that Luther was sincere. He really was tormented. And he would get peace for a few moments when the priest would give him absolution. He would leave the confessional, go back toward his cell, and then be plunged into despair because he remembered a sin that he had committed in the last 24 hours that he forgot to mention in the confessional. Now, because of this torment over guilt that Luther experienced, some have even suggested that he was mentally unbalanced, and maybe proves the point that there's a thin line between genius and insanity. But if we look beyond that, we see that Luther's entire life was marked by one crisis after another. And there for a while, it seemed that these crises came about every 5 years. Because in 1505, Luther, at the time, was a student studying law. His father, Hans Luther, who had been a coal miner, had had grand plans for his son Martin, who had showed and displayed great intellectual ability and capacity, for him to become a prominent lawyer. And so his father sent him to the university. And what is often not known is that Martin Luther, before he ever went into the monastery, had already distinguished himself as one of the leading thinkers in the field of jurisprudence on the whole continent of Europe. In fact, if we want to understand Luther's torment of the theological nature, we have to understand that Luther brought the expert's legal mind to the law of God. And when Luther so minutely examined the law of God, particularly in the Old Testament, he was driven to the edge of despair because he realized that his life never measured up to the radical demands of purity and holiness that are found in the law of God. If anything drove Luther in these early years, it was that, his understanding of the law of God. And at one point he said, "You asked me if I love God. Love God, I hate God." Because he saw God and he saw Christ merely as angry judges who would apply the measuring stick of the absolute law of God to the performance of Martin Luther, and Luther knew he would come up wanting. Well, this guilt complex that he had tormented him while he was in the university, while he's studying law. And we know of the occasion where he's on his way home and this fierce storm arises suddenly and a lightning bolt strikes right next to him. I believe he was on a horse at the time and he's thrown to the ground and almost killed by this bolt of lightning. Now, we remember a few years ago where that happened at the Western Open in Chicago during a golf tournament and Lee Trevino and Jerry Hurd and some other people were mildly injured by this close call with lightning. And afterwards, Lee Trevino was interviewed by the television networks, and the network commentator said to Lee Trevino, "What did you learn from this experience?" And Trevino, the Merry Max, who always has a joke to tell, said, "I learned two things." And he said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, the first thing I learned was that if the Almighty wants to play through, you better get out of the way." And he said, "The second thing I learned is that from now on, when the storm clouds come up, I'm going to walk down the middle of the fairway holding my one iron up in the air." And the commentator said, why would you do that? That would be just like holding a lightning rod. He said, no, even God can't hit a one iron. So Trevino made a joke out of it and went on his way. Not Luther. When Luther has this lightning bolt hit so close to him, he cries out in panic, help me, St. Anne, I will become a monk. And to his father's utter consternation, Luther leaves his studies in the university and enters the monastery to fulfill his vow to St. Anne. That's in 1505. But even after he's there for a period of time, he is still not getting relief from this relentless, hounding guilt that is assailing his soul. In 1510, 5 years later, Luther has a second major crisis. And this crisis takes place when Luther is assigned by the head of his monastery, along with one of the other brothers, to be the delegates of that monastery there in Germany to a convocation that was taking place in the city of Rome. And these two men, Luther and his friend, went largely by foot all the way from Germany to Rome. And when Luther was told that he was selected to make this pilgrimage to Rome, he was elated. Because at this time in the church, making sacred pilgrimages had great value in terms of penance, and that Luther could gain some merit for his soul by making this pilgrimage to the holy city. And so he set his hopes and his sights of going to Rome, the very cradle of the church, that here perhaps he could find the peace that he was longing for. Well, his experience when he got to the Eternal City was very similar to Paul's experience when he came to Athens. You recall when Paul stood at the gates of Athens, his soul was moved within him because he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. When Luther arrived at Rome, he was shocked by the visible corruption of the clergy in the city. Sexual corruption that had been unprecedented in the history of the church. And he was watching fellow priests running through the mass in 5 minutes in such perfunctory fashion just to get it done. And he didn't see any sense of piety or devotion to the things of God. The heart of his pilgrimage was to go to the sacred steps that had been allegedly the steps that Jesus walked for the judgment of Pontius Pilate, which had been sent to Rome and installed in the church there. And the pilgrims would come and they would go up these stairs and they would go on their knees and they would say the rosary as they went. And so Luther went to the church and on his knees on these stone stairs, he said a prayer on each stair, kissed each step, went all the way to the top. And as he got to the top, he was hit with the thought that maybe this didn't work. And he said out loud, who knows if it is true? And so his visit to Rome, which he thought would help get rid of his doubts and his torment, only exacerbated his anguish. And when he returned to Germany, he continued to struggle. His third major crisis took place 5 years later, 1515. Luther had recently completed lectures at the university. He was now a doctor of the church, and he was teaching theology and biblical studies there at Wittenberg. And he had recently finished a series of lectures on the book of Psalms, and now it was his responsibility to lecture on Paul's letter to the Romans. And while he was preparing for those lectures, he read the classic sources, Lombard Sentences and so on, but he also read some of the works of the patron saint of his order, Saint Augustine. And as he was reading Augustine, he stumbled upon a passage where Augustine commented on the first chapter of Romans, where Paul says, when he introduces the theme of justification, that now the righteousness of God is revealed by faith. The just shall live by faith. And as he was working on that, he naturally assumed that when the Bible and when Paul in Romans speaks about the righteousness of God, that he was referring to God's own intrinsic, inherent righteousness, which is the thing Luther feared the most in all of the world, because Luther knew that he was not righteous and that God was righteous, and he couldn't see how there was much good news in a gospel that reveals the righteousness of God to people who aren't righteous. That's bad news. But as he was reading these notes from Augustine, he read where Augustine said, in this passage in Romans, when Paul speaks of the righteousness of God that is by faith, he is speaking not of that righteousness by which God himself is righteous, but rather a righteousness that God bestows freely to all who believe. It is a righteousness that does not arise out of ourselves. It is a righteousness that is the gift of God that he gives to believers. And Luther, as he understood that insight from Augustine, said that light flooded his soul and the doors of paradise swung open and I walked through. And he had this profound existential experience in what was called the tower experience, where the burden of his unresolved guilt rolled off of his back, and he realized that the only way he could stand before a just and holy God was to be cloaked in the righteousness of Christ, which Luther couldn't beg or borrow or steal or deserve or earn, but could only humbly receive, trusting in this gift of God's mercy. Now, you have to understand the significance of that, because when you look at the Reformation and the foment of that controversy, there's a sense in which Martin Luther stood contra mundum, against the world. And a man either has to be unbelievably obstreperous or incredibly arrogant to defy all of the authorities that Luther defied and refused to budge from his position. And certainly Luther was a stubborn man. There's no question about that. But even the most stubborn of men will, for the most part, be worn down by the relentless critique that he received by the authorities of his day. Why wouldn't he back down? He had fought too hard and too long to gain peace with God, to surrender to anyone. See, it was in that experience that his conviction of justification by faith alone was awakened. And once he came to the rest of Romans from that insight he gleaned from St. Augustine, then the clarity of Paul's teaching of justification by faith alone reinforced Luther to such a degree that he wasn't going to negotiate this with anybody for any earthly reason. And I had a kind of weird experience with that same text a few years ago. It was in the summer, and I was just leisurely reading Augustine. Just for my own edification, I didn't have any lectures to prepare, books to write, or anything like that. I was just indulging myself by reading Augustine, and I happened to be reading a rather obscure essay of Augustine's that was highly technical and wasn't dealing with the matter of justification at all. It was dealing with the linguistic issue. And in the very midst of this technical, and I have to say, dry article that Augustine wrote, he goes into this little excursion, a detour from his central theme, and refers to Romans 1. And I'm reading this, and I read, Augustine says, here Paul speaks of that righteousness of God which is by faith. And Paul here is referring not to that righteousness by which God himself is righteous, but that righteousness that he makes available freely to all who put their trust in Christ. And I'll tell you, that was weird. Because I had this unbelievable sensation that here I am in the 20th century, reading words on a page that were written 1,500 years ago by a man in North Africa. And I thought, I wonder what Augustine was thinking when he put these words on a paper. Surely he had no idea that anybody would be interested in them 1,500 years later. And I thought, I wonder what Augustine would have thought if he could have been a fly on the wall in the tower at Wittenberg and watched the descent of glory that struck Martin Luther when Martin Luther read his words. And sitting there reading them myself, now in the 20th century, I felt like I was eavesdropping on Augustine and on Luther. I don't think that Martin Luther was crazy. I think Martin Luther was perhaps the most honest Christian that ever lived after the first century. He really understood something about the character of God. He understood something about the righteousness of God and about the justness of God. And the more we understand how righteous God is, the less we can deceive ourselves about ourselves. I once heard a sermon by a Presbyterian minister many, many years ago where he kept quoting Paul's statements in Corinthians. A version of the translation reads like this: "And those judging themselves by themselves are not wise." And the minister, in a litany of refrains, kept saying this phrase over and over again. He would make a point, and then he would finish that point by saying, "And those judging themselves by themselves are not wise." He must have said it 10 times in the sermon, because that's what we do. We evaluate ourselves by ourselves, hoping that God is going to grade us all on a curve. And if we can find somebody who's more wicked than we are, we take solace or refuge in that. And we don't keep our eye on the standard by which we are to be judged. But Luther did. The righteousness of God. And it was at that moment that he realized that the only righteousness that could ever save him could not come from Martin Luther. It had to come from God himself. And at that moment, the seeds of the Reformation had germinated.
The impetus for one of the most important events in church history, in fact, all of history. That's the founder and chairman of Ligonier Ministries, Dr. R.C. Sproul, with a lesson titled, Luther's Discovery. For additional resources related to Luther and his teaching, we invite you to go to our website, renewingyourmind.org. Dr. Sproul returns in just a moment with today's Coram Deo thought. But first, we're in a series called Justification by Faith Alone. It's a 15-part study following the life and teaching of Martin Luther as he discovered the wonder of God's grace and the freedom found in the gospel. You can request a copy of this complete series on CD when you give a gift of any amount to Ligonier Ministries. Call 1-800-435-4343 or online go to renewingyourmind.org. As you listen to this series, you'll come to understand the issues and concerns Martin Luther raised against the Roman Catholic Church during the Reformation. And Dr. Sproul explains why we must still guard against those same issues today. As you listen, you'll come to a better understanding of God's grace that brings us peace through Jesus Christ, that alien righteousness, as Luther described, that's found only in Christ. Give a gift of any amount and request the CD series titled Justification by Faith Alone. Call 1-800-435-4343. And again, our web address is renewingyourmind.org. Now, here's Dr. Sproul with today's final thought.
There have been times in my life where I've been afflicted by melancholy, not in the last 20 years or so, but particularly as a young student and as a budding theologian, I used to find myself feeling depressed about things and sad and blue, discouraged. And whenever I did that, I would turn to Luther. Not because I was looking for theological insights that I couldn't find somewhere else, but because I could identify with him because he was so earthy. He was so much like that. He had to fight these things all the time. He talked about having an ongoing, endless struggle with Satan himself, where Satan would come at him with what Luther called an anfechtung, an unbridled assault against him to take away his joy, to take away his peace, and to take away his comfort. And Luther would say, then he would rush to the gospel and rest upon the gospel in order to refresh his understanding of the peace with God that was his in Christ. And I have to say to you, I love Martin Luther, warts and all. I know there were problems with his personality and some of his behavior was tempestuous at times and all the rest. And I was kidding at the beginning of this session today with some of the folks who are here who are Lutherans. And I said, oh, well, I'm talking about your boy today, except that he's my boy. And he doesn't just belong to the Lutherans. He belongs to all of us, just like Aquinas belongs to all of us and Augustine belongs to all of us. And these giants of the faith that God has been pleased to give his church, because Luther embodied the struggle of every Christian to have peace with God. And if you have that struggle, let me commend to you the works of Martin Luther, because they in turn will steer you to the works of the apostles, from which we really derive our hope.
And that hope is what Ligonier Ministries is all about. We're glad you've joined us today, and we want to thank you for remembering that this ministry is listener-supported. To show your support by mail, write to us at Ligonier Ministries, Post Office Box 865-777, Orlando, Florida, 32886. Again, that's P.O. Box 865-777, Orlando, 32886. I'm Lee Webb. Next weekend, R.C. continues this series with a lesson on one of the other factors that led to the Protestant Reformation, the selling of indulgences. That's next weekend on Renewing Your Mind.